But if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like nothing changed at all?
Chapter 13. This one, Five says, a few hundred meters down the stairs. There's a silver door leading off the landing, a control panel beside it, and Five has a decent sense of direction, of space. This is far enough down, and they have to be right beside the room with the trap. Think it needs a code? Echo asks, frowning at the panel. But when Five steps closer and brushes the dust off, the light at the top is green. It's unlocked, he says, heart in his throat, and touches the button. Hardly dares to hope, but with a soft click, the door slides back. And when Fives locks it open, it stays that way. Shoulder bumping Fives's, Echo slides in beside him, then taps another button. Within the room, there's a click, a rumble. The lights come up, and through the doorway, Fives can see the floor rebuilding itself, tiles locking back into place in a fluttering sweep like shifting scales. The lights stay on, illuminating a bare, open stretch of ground, with strange gray crystals set into the walls. Fives is entirely certain they're the same unmoving, unearthly crystals that served as the marker for this place on the galaxy door. And he wonders if they're native to this planet, if they're something that the Masters were particularly fond of. John, he calls out, stepping into the room. Echo follows, leaning down to wedge his blaster across the doorway just in case it tries to close behind them. Fives wants to appreciate the forethought, but his heart is beating a little too hard, his ears ringing. There's no sign of John, no Jedi in an oversized cloak sitting on the ground and waiting for them. They hadn't been able to see him when the lights went up and the paths rebuilt themselves as they were crossing. There wasn't any hint as to where he was down here. And something like fear crawls up Fives' spine. What if he landed somewhere else entirely? John? Echo calls, pitch to Carrie, and Fives matches him as they step into the room, careful of where they put their feet. John, we got it. Where are you? Still no answer, and Fives turns, puts his back to Echo's as they scan the room. With the tiles locked together above them, it's hard to say where the vault is, but Fives thinks he sees the jut of stairs leading to it. A few meters over, there's a column of what looks like glass that's full of golden sand, and Fives winces at the thought of how fragile it looks, how easily the whole vault could have come down if that's what it's holding up. A weight thing, maybe. Too many people in the vault and it collapses? Which is clever, but brutal. So that matches all the traps they've seen so far. Where is he? Echo says, full of sharp edges. He jumped down here, I know it. Maybe when we deactivated the trap, it covered some doorway he went through? Five suggests, giving the room another sweep. Echo starts along the wall, headed right, like he's looking for openings, and Fives turns the other direction, towards the glass column. He studies the wall, the floor, but if there's any secret opening, it's completely hidden. Maybe another force trap, he thinks. Grim. If that's it, they're just wasting time, and something scuffs under his boot, and Fives pauses, looks down. There's sand on the floor. It's golden, soft against Fives' fingers when he leans down to touch it. Not a lot of sand, but a definite scattering of it. In a way, Fives wouldn't have expected to be able to escape from a closed column. Frowning, Fives looks up at the glass, following the rise of the column up to where it disappears into the ceiling, and can't see any holes. Follows it down. Catches an edge of something dark buried in the sand. Echo! Five shouts, panic beating in his chest, and he throws himself forward. Hears running footsteps close in. Echo the column, he's in there, in the sand. Carking hells, Echo says, ragged, and slams his hand against the glass. There has to be a door. He got in there somehow. On the other side of the pillar from him, Five sees the crack. Here, he calls, and digs his fingers into the seam, wrenches at it. His fingers slip, not able to get a solid grip, and he makes a sound of fury. He shoves forward and hauls back again, and an instant later, Echo is there too, pushing Fives' hands to the side. Over here, this side, he says. See, look, there's a divot, like a handhold, right against the seam so that it's almost invisible from most angles. When Echo grabs it, though, there's a faint shift. And Fives gets his hands into it as well, digs his heels in, and hauls back just as Echo does. And with a groan, the door slides open a handful of inches. Sand spills out, covering their boots, but not enough. Fives grits his teeth and puts all his weight into pulling back, trying not to think how impossible this door would be to open from the inside, even with greater than human strength. And he snarls, drags. The door slides all the way open with a protesting screech. A cascade of sand spills out, and a body comes with it. John! Echo cries, and he lunges, pulling John up and out of the sand. And Fives gets his other arm, helps haul him clear. He's still, limp in their grip, covered in powder-fine grains of sand. And Fives thinks of sand in his lungs, of John drowning in sand like it was water, and curses desperately. He rolls John up on his side, presses his fingers to John's throat, and searches frantically for a pulse. They took too long in the vault, spent too long debating what was right, and John suffocated in sand while they stood over his head and didn't even think. With a racking cough, John jerks. He gags, claws at the floor, chokes, and coughs as he heaves for breath. And Fives curses. He grabs John's shoulders, but John wrenches back, one hand coming up like he's trying to block a blow even as he coughs, and Fives' chest twists. John, he says. John, it's us. You're all right. You're out of there. John doesn't raise his head, doesn't stop coughing, but his hand grabs for Fives, and Fives catches it, leans over him. He's covered in sand, shedding it with each heaving cough. And Echo meets Fives' eyes over his head, expression full of worry, curling a hand around his shoulder. Echo braces him, pulling a canteen from his belt. Can you drink, John? He asks. I have water, if that will help. John shakes his head, pulling at the neck of his robes, and Fives gets it a moment later. He drags John up into his arms, bracing John's back against his chest, and starts pulling at his sash. Echo, help me get this off. He needs skin for his healing thing. Echo doesn't even hesitate. He starts stripping John, getting his tunics open. The undershirt he just gets his hands in and rips down the middle, and John makes a wheezing sound that's probably thanks, splaying a hand over his own chest. There's no light, no sparks, no visible change. But after a long, long moment, John jerks, hisses. His head falls back against Fives' shoulder, and he gasps, but this time his breathing is clear, deep. He doesn't sound like he's still halfway to suffocating, and Fives lets out a shuddering breath, wrapping both arms around John's waist and burying his face in sandy hair. John, he gets out, ragged, and one of John's hands curls over his, grips tightly. He tips his head, and a moment later, Echo makes a sound of pure, wrenching grief and folds down against him, wrapping his arms around John and Fives both. Criff, Echo manages, voice shaky. John, that door could only be opened from the outside. Long fingers curl into Echo's short hair, and John tips his head, temple resting against Fives's. Couldn't think, he manages, even rougher and raspier than normal. I had my lightsaber, but something in there. It was a test, a trap, but one only a Jedi would have managed, Fives thinks, and he has to swallow hard. self-sacrifice and selflessness, and then the only way to get out of the trap was to have someone come back for him instead of just leaving with the lightsaber. "We've got you," he promises, kissing John's cheekbone, his temple, the curve of his brow. "We've got you, and we're not letting you go." A raw noise drags from John's throat, and he clutches at them both, hauls them closer. Fives wraps himself around John as best as he can, feels Echo do the same, and they pin him between them, completely surrounded, safe, and theirs. And Fives means it when he says they're never letting go. No matter what, no matter the reason, John's never leaving their sight again. "Easy," Fives says softly, and John nods, breathless with even the short climb back up the stairs. Fives is under his arm, holding him up, and John wants to be careful, not put too much weight on him, but he still feels shaky with lost oxygen, like the inside of his throat and his chest have been sandblasted raw. He'll heal himself more when they're safe, when he's had a few more minutes to recover, but right now getting out seems like the best plan for all of them. "Here," Echo says, and pushes the door to the vault open a little wider, then reaches back and gets John's other arm, like not touching him for even a few moments is too much. John lets himself be moved, too tired to think of why he shouldn't, and Echo wraps his arms around him, all but picks him up off his feet, and sinks down with him, pulling John into his lap. John shudders, turning his head to bury his face in Echo's throat, and Echo's hitching breath says everything. He clutches John close, and they should get up, keep moving, but... "We'll just rest here for a second," Echo promises, and Fives slides to his knees in front of them, looking worried. Not able to help himself, John reaches out, groping for his hand, and Fives catches it immediately, squeezing tightly. "I'll be all right," John promises, and Fives makes a sound of amusement that only just covers the ache underneath. "Yeah," he says, sinking down and pulling John's knees over his own. "Now you will be, because we're never leaving you again." "Ever," Echo promises, and the grip of his arms is almost bruising. If we just left... His voice breaks on horror, and John wasn't scared of dying, even like that, but it still makes a shiver of horrified resignation eat up his spine. "Thank you," he manages, curling a hand around Echo's arm, tightening his grip on Fives' hand. "I thank you for coming back." "We finished the mission," Echo says, stubborn and set, like John can't feel his desperation. "We got the lightsaber, so it was fine. If we left you behind, there was no point in anything." A trap for a Jedi, but not the death of a Jedi, John thinks, and closes his eyes, breathing out. He wants to curl up right where he is, stay in Echo's lap, and sleep for a week. But they really do have a mission to finish. Squeezing Echo's arm, he pushes up, careful, and Fives instantly catches him, pulls John's arm over his shoulder and braces him. "John," he says, concerned, even as he helps John get his feet under him. "We can rest here." John shakes his head, trying to marshal his thoughts, put together some kind of response. "Noel needs to know we made it," he says. "She'll know where we can go. And I need a shower." Fives' laugh is rough but warm. "Yeah," he agrees. "You do. Echo?" Echo gets to his feet, slinging his blaster back over his shoulder. "Need anything else from the vault?" he asks. John pauses, a little startled by the thought. He looks around the room for the first time, really registering where they are, and has to swallow. There are hundreds of years' worth of work on display, the creations of dozens of masters who lived and died centuries ago. The lightsaber he came to find is just one piece out of thousands, And to think of all of them staying here, lost, to fall away into dust with the rest of the temple. It aches with a quiet sort of sadness that John's felt far too many times, thinking about the past and what the Order lost. Carefully, John pulls away from Fives and Echo, walks across the room to the closest shelf on unsteady legs, and then pauses there, running his fingers over the hilts. Psychometry isn't one of his gifts, but the care put into all of these is almost tangible, something soft and bright and warm. They're all beautiful, 100 different designs and types meant for different hands and different styles and different purposes. John's rebuilt his own lightsaber 12 times over the years, found new crystals 6 as many times, but his work is still impossibly rough and amateurish by comparison. The Jedi who crafted these really were masters in all senses of the word. Halfway down the shelf, green catches John's eye. A pair of lightsabers. One a smaller Shoto with sleek silver hilts. They're wrapped in thin green leather over the grip, with bylark wood inlays in a pattern of delicate leaves. John's never seen anything quite so lovely, and he reaches for them, lifts them down with reverent hands. "Pretty," Five says, from a pace behind him, and John can't help but snort at the understatement. "Very," he agrees softly, and the buttons to turn them on are carved like knots on a tree trunk, tiny and precise. John ignites the Shoto, and the blade is a green 3 shades darker than his own, edged with a touch of silver in a way he's never seen before. It's beautiful, and John hesitates. Swallows. He has a lightsaber, but keep it, Echo says quietly, warmly, and his hand closes around John's elbow, gripping gently. He's smiling. It suits you. It feels rude, John says, but it's hard to look away from the blade. I came for a reason. Five snorts, pressing their shoulders together. You didn't come expecting to pick up 2 clone troopers either, he points out. Besides, lightsabers are meant to be used, right? I'm pretty sure none of these were meant to become decorations and just sit on a shelf until the end of time. They weren't, even if they were largely crafted for the art of crafting itself. John is sure they were all intended to be eminently functional, and he can hear the crystals singing to him the same way his own does. Switching the Shoto off, John sighs, but curls his hands a little more tightly around both hilts, then attaches them to the connector clips on his belt. He'll have to find better ones, but for now, these will do. It feels like a good decision, too. Like something warms at his choice. And he steps back, then turns and raises his hands, bowing to the 2 statues beside the door. Thank you. He says quietly, to whatever ghosts are still listening. There's no response, but John wasn't expecting one. And he glances over, offers a small smile to Fives and Echo. It shouldn't be too far to the mountainside. Fives grins back, stepping close and sliding under his arm again, one hand hooked around John's waist. Good. I think I'm more than ready to leave this place behind us. Me too, Echo mutters, firmly closing the door leading down to the trapped room. He waits for John and Fives to pass him on their way up the other set of stairs, then pulls that door shut behind them as well and follows. I'm gonna have nightmares about walking across tiled floors. Stairs, is Fives' verdict, and John can't help a sound of amusement. Even with what we did on the stairs before? He asks. And Fives makes a low, desperate noise, grip tightening. John! He complains. That's not fair! A hand settles low on John's back, fingers digging in lightly. That was a good start, Echo says pointedly, and John's breath catches. But as soon as we're near a bed and have a day to ourselves, we're going to wreck you. A sound jars from John's throat, and he's too tired to be thinking of it. But he can't fight the shiver that runs through him, the way he leans into Fives' hold. Fives smiles at him, leans in and kisses the corner of his mouth, and murmurs, "Later, promise." Because they're staying, they both want to stay. John closes his eyes, hardly able to believe it.
"You could, but what about your unit?" he asks, raw. "Aren't you going back to them?"
"We've already been reported missing in action, probably," Echo says. And as the stairwell widens out, he catches up, falls in on John's other side and braces him, one arm around his waist. "Or killed in action. Like you, right? So it's fine. We're not leaving you." John can hardly believe it. Doesn't know if he should. All the reasons why he shouldn't be a commander are still all too real, but...
"I can't. I'm not command material," he says helplessly.
Fives snorts. "So, don't give commands. We all work together pretty well," he says. "It doesn't have to be you as our general. You can just be our Jedi." "Makes it less awkward for us to fuck you that way, too," Echo says, and John makes a sound of embarrassed offense, ducking his head. Fives laughs at him and kisses his cheek, though, so it's hard to mind the words too much. Still, John closes his fingers more tightly over Fives' shoulder, takes a breath.
"You have to leave me," he says,
and even as Fives and Echo both make insistent sounds of protest, he shakes his head.
"No, if I ever hurt you, you have to leave me. Promise me."
"Like your master hurt you?" Fives asks, too quick, too clever. When John stiffens, he smiles crookedly, and Echo's low sound is the next best thing to a growl.
"It was training,"
John says, ducking his head. His hair is full of clumpy sand. It doesn't hide his face well, but he tries anyway.
"She made me a Jedi and made sure I wouldn't fall to the dark side. But if I do..."
"You won't," Echo says flatly, and takes two steps past them to hit the button on the panel beside a short doorway. It slides open, letting in a gust of icy wind. And as John and Fives stagger up the last few stairs, Echo catches John's arm, drags him up, then turns and shoves him up against the stone beside the door. John almost startles, but before he can even twitch away, Echo is on him, hands on his thighs and hauling him up, mouth slamming into John's with bruising force. John gasps, clutches at broad shoulders made broader by pauldrons and armor, and Echo kisses him brutally, kisses him breathless, kisses him until John's head is spinning, and he can hardly hang on to Echo at all. He whimpers, and Echo pulls away, too quick, too soon, drops him on his feet and shoves him up against Fives. Without hesitation, Fives catches John's face between his hands, kisses him as well, and his mouth is softer, but he slants their lips together, never long enough, just enough to steal everything that's left of John's breath until he's gasping, clutching at Fives and his teasing mouth and the smile John can feel. "You won't." Fives breathes against his lips and presses his thumb against one of the marks he left just a short while ago. "You would never." John ducks his head, burying his face in Fives' throat, and Fives smiles, kisses his hair. "Ugh, sand," he says instantly, pulling away and making a face, and John can't help but laugh, the sound shaking through him. Echo snorts, wrapping his arms around both of them from behind John, and he tucks his face into the nape of John's neck, just breathing. "We were thinking," he says, low, "about after the war." Fives is still smiling, pressed against John's cheek. "Yeah, we were," he agrees,
about the old Jedi temples and how there are going to be a lot of clones with nowhere to go and not enough Jedi to work like they used to. So what about restoring all the lost temples and making them places for Jedi and clones? John closes his eyes, overwhelmed. He can see it, clear as day in his mind. A temple full of clones and Jedi in the Outer Rim, with gardens and rooms full of laughter and a creche. A place brought back to life, brought back into being by many hands, with sunlight and warmth and a place in the Force, a duty they can finally fulfill completely, with no one left abandoned. It's more than he'd ever thought to imagine, but he can already sense it, the pull, the call of that future pulling them onward together. "Yes," he says, ragged, rough, and grips Fives's side, Echo's arm as he tries to hang on and ground himself. That's a good thought. Echo kisses the knobs of his spine, smiling against his skin. "We thought so too," he says softly. Before John can answer, there's a quiet, insistent beeping. John lifts his head, and Echo fumbles for one of his pouches, pulling out John's comm and handing it back as he pulls away from Fives. Fives doesn't let him go far, but loops an arm around his waist again, holding him up as he checks the code and then accepts the transmission. "Vagrant," Noel says, her shimmering blue image rising. "Finally, you've been giving me one long heart attack for the last 8 hours. "Hello, Noel," John says ruefully, and she stops short, looking him over. Her eyes go to Fives, then Echo, and she folds her arms over her chest and huffs. "You look like Bantha shit, Antilles," she says bluntly. "Do I need to come down there and pull you out of trouble?" "Fives and Echo already did that," John says, tacit acknowledgement of what she isn't asking. "We found it." Noel pauses for a moment, then laughs, and it's all relief and victory in equal measure. "Carking hell, John, I knew it!" She turns and calls, "Nico, pay up! It only took him a day!" From outside the holo, there's a loud scoff and a credit chip comes flying at Noel's head. "Faye, you said it would be difficult," Nico says. Another face leans into view, and Faye tugs her hood down, smiling with bemusement. "Less difficult with help," she allows and inclines her head. "The back door is still open, I see." "Careful what you touch," Noel advises. "They probably had sex on it 600 years ago. Ow! Violence from the healer!" Faye rolls her eyes, withdrawing her fist from Noel's arm, but tells John, "There's a house about a kilometer down the mountain next to the river. One of Noel's smuggler friends will be there in a few days to pick you up. With the shelling, we can't get anyone there sooner." "That's all right," John says, a little relieved, and feels Echo's hand curl around his. "We could use a rest." Faye smiles, then turns her head. "I need to get back to Maul," she says, "but I'm glad you're safe, John. It's nice to meet you, Echo. Fives, welcome." "Yeah, welcome," Noel says, still rubbing her arm. "If you can make the Drifter relax and actually sleep for more than 4 hours at a time, I'll pay you 100 credits for every hour. So have fun tiring him out and we'll see you in a few days." "Noel," John says, face hot, and Noel laughs at him without mercy. "Test that crystal," she tells him, "after you've slept. Later." The comm cuts off, and John sighs, brushing a hand through his hair. "Sorry," he says ruefully, and Echo snorts. 100 credits an hour, was it?" he asks, raising a brow, and John refuses to look at him, instead reaching for the red hilt he's carrying. It practically leaps into John's hand, and he catches it, turns it over in his fingers. A hand settles on his waist, and Fives leans against him, watching curiously. "So what does this one do?" he asks. "Is it really enough to beat a Sith Lord?" "Not alone," John says, but he raises the hilt, breathes out. No button, but he can feel the mechanisms in the Force, and it's easy enough to touch them. The blade ignites, perfectly soundless, almost entirely transparent. And when John takes a step forward, he can feel the ghost fire crystal's resonance all around him. Near invisibility, with a shimmer of afterimage as he moves, that would confuse even the best duelist. And he smiles as he deactivates the blade. But I think it will help. Fives' laughter is incredulous, bright, and he takes a step forward, grabs John around the waist, and whirls him into a kiss that steals every last bit of John's breath. "Criff," he says, "that's amazing. You're gonna end the war." He spins John once more, then lets him go, and with a grin, Echo catches him, pulls him into another whirl, and then kisses him as well, and John is laughing as he does. "We," he says, when Echo lets him up, and he curls his fingers into Echo's curls as Fives presses up behind him. "We're going to end the war. And then?" "Then," Echo says, tangling his fingers with Fives's, leaning in to kiss John again. "Then we'll rebuild it." The end.
If you close your eyes, does it almost feel like nothing changed at all? And if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like you've been here before? Oh, how I'm beginning to be an optimist about this. How I'm beginning to be an optimist about this. If you close your eyes, does it almost feel like nothing changed at all?
The music used in this podfic is Pompeii by Bastille. If you enjoyed this podfic, you can leave feedback both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening.
There's a special... Oh my gosh. Immediately. No. Look, when I said that my voice being wrecked was really good for John, I did not mean that the moment I dropped into John voice and narrative voice that my voice should just collapse completely. Not what I wanted.